Hello and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks, Josh. I mean, after spending a romantic Valentine's Day with you in the basement of Legends Bar watching some tremendous football games over the weekend, I'm feeling very satisfied.
That's true. We got one great match, one fascinating match, and one kind of bad match with an interesting result, I think, is the
chronological order. I'm trying to place in my mind which game you're speaking about in each regard. I think I know.
I thought that we'll get into this later, but I thought the Man City Tottenham match was a not particularly good match. That the end result is very fascinating for what happens with the league the rest of the year. But I didn't really enjoy watching that match. Maybe it was because I'd been drinking for like 6 hours starting at 6:30 in the morning. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that compounded with the fact that you had captained Aguero and you really needed some Aguero to do something to overtake me in our head-to-head.
That's true, but I would like to think that I'm objective enough that I can watch a match and say this is not a very fun match. Did you think that was a good – I mean, did you think – were you entertained by Man City Tottenham?
It's a good question. I can barely remember anything that happened apart from the goals.
It was all contested in the midfield. I came away impressed with Tottenham's defense. I will say that much.
Yeah, the Spurs were just so organized, and City didn't offer anything. We'll certainly get into that a little bit more. But on a personal level, my game weeks was somehow redeemed. I don't even know how it was redeemed. It was redeemed by one player, Mesut Ozil, who ended up with a last-minute assist. And as we see time and time again, he miraculously collects all three bonus points.
Yeah,
for just delivering on one assist.
It really showed how central the fantasy game is to my experience watching soccer, because I am an Arsenal supporter, and you know, they score this last minute kick to, you know, to win the game, you know, last play of the game basically. And because I don't have Ozil and you do, and I knew he'd be on three bonus points as soon as that ball went in, it was a little bittersweet for me. I couldn't really celebrate because I knew that I was now in trouble in our weekly head-to-head match, and I also knew that because everyone in the league owns Ozil except for me, and I mean like almost literally every one of the 3.5 million players owns Mesut Ozil, my overall rank was going to suffer as well.
It was quite the picture, because right behind you was an old fat guy in a Bergkamp jersey losing his absolute mind, and yeah, you were running through all the machinations of how this impacted your FPL team.
I did. Yeah, I went to a new PLA.net or whatever that like tracking website is, and as soon as I saw three bonus points, I was like, oh god, I'm screwed.
Yeah, but day one of this game week was an absolute horror show for me. So David De Gea loses his clean sheet and ends up getting what is one of the more dubious own goals we've seen. I mean, I guess technically, you can see how he does put it into his own net, but that ball's – it was a tough one to swallow. It was very dubious.
Yeah, I really felt like Anthony Martial was as culpable as De Gea was for that
goal. Yeah,
he hit it into it ricocheted off De Gea.
I guess Martial's clearance isn't on target, so therefore De Gea puts it in.
Yeah, I guess the goal has to go to somebody, right? And yeah. So I guess that's how it works out.
Yeah, so it was that coupled with Everton's performance against West Brom. I made a last-minute call setting my team on Friday night to go ahead and captain Lukaku, which I wouldn't qualify that as a maverick move. But I did know that you had traded Lukaku for Giroud, so you wouldn't be able to cover his points. And you had to believe how terrible West Brom has looked over the last month or so, that an Everton playing at home, being somewhat high-flying of late, they were going to score goals.
Yeah, I mean, they lost Macaulay in their FA Cup replay at midweek, so it definitely – I was definitely a little nervous when I saw that you had captained Lukaku. I mean, I had Barkley, so I felt like I had a little bit of coverage in that match, but I was definitely a little nervous. As it turns out, that was probably the least enjoyable of the Saturday afternoon fixtures to watch. I thought that in the end, West Ham Norwich was definitely the the kind of highlight match of that during that time. It was just so wide open. It was really even in the first half, like all the goals were scored. It was a 2-2 draw. All the goals were scored in the second half. But even the first half was just all over the. I mean, it was completely open match.
I agree. Yeah, I was surfing around that entire second half of that middle round of fixtures, trying to, because I was sick and tired of watching Jonas Olsen just drape himself all over Lukaku. There came a point where you realized the refs were not going to call any fouls on Lukaku in the box, and Everton just wasn't going to score. It was like full on Tony Pulis effect.
There was a moment around the 60th minute mark, I totally agree, where you're just like, I mean, I stopped watching the match because I just thought there's no way that Everton's going to score in this match. It's just there's something about the way they looked in that match, which is really surprising coming off that 3-0 defeat, or I mean, that 3-0 victory in Stoke last week. And you thought, okay, like they finally. They figured something out. They've turned it on. I think that was 3 clean sheets in a row for them. And kind of like right back to the drawing board. It just really, really disappointing performance for Everton.
They seemed a little surprised at how West Brom was playing, Everton did. And they just had no ideas as to how to crack that defense. But I was really worried because of the amount of suffocation that they were giving to Lukaku. It really favored Ross Barkley.
He thought he might die.
I thought he might die. I thought he might just, run out of air.
Asphyxiation, yeah.
you had Ross Barkley in the hole, and he had so much space because West Brom was sitting back so much. Yeah, I thought for sure one of his many 30-yard attempts was going to go into the top corner.
Yeah, and one went off the inside post, and he didn't score. It was interesting because it was an even 100 times this season that a player on my fantasy team has hit the inside post and not scored.
What luck.
Yeah, I know. It was a nice milestone to hit. I knew I'd get there eventually, and now it's an even 100.
Yeah, so I guess things for me ultimately turned around with Payet getting 13 points, then a goal from Kane, and Ozil coming through with 8. That put me up to 51 points, beating the average by 10.
There's an interesting thing about the Payet goals, but, you know, he sort of – it's – but, you know, if you're on, if you're following fantasy accounts on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, it feels like Payet is owned by 100% of the managers in the league. But I think as of Saturday, he was owned by something like 22.5%. So him scoring 13 points is actually huge for, you know, anybody who had him.
He's still at 23.2% ownership right now.
Yeah, so a pretty significant differential still.
Yeah, and I would credit that with me getting my first green arrow in some time. I actually got all green arrows except for the Hail Cheaters Super League, where I dropped down to 207. Yeah.
Well, we added a ton of managers this week, so thank you for continuing to join. And on that note, Brandon, I am going to transition to the Hail Cheaters Super League.
Oh, you're not going to tell us what your point total was?
It was three or four less than yours. It was just a little bit less. I had green arrows, I think, everywhere but the Hail Cheater Super League as well. You know, finally, my numbers are finally starting to approach respectability. But I think for me, this is the week that showed me I just have to really open up my team now, and I just have to play differential captains and just really go for it, because I really don't care if I finish in the 2 millionth. You know, it just doesn't matter to me. I've finished very high before, and I even had a season where I finished pretty low a couple years ago. So overall rank to me isn't that important. I'd rather really go for it, really push the differentials. And if that means I finish in last place in some leagues, that doesn't really bother me because, you know, I mean, we have 12 weeks left and the slate's wiped clean after this. So who cares? You know, I mean, in our mini league, you know, our actual pay, like moneyed, you know, everyone puts in, indeterminate amount of money. In that one, I am I'm about 200 points behind. I think that Daniel, a friend of ours who's leading that league, I think he's in the top 1,000 overall, or right around there.
Yeah, around 2,000, I think.
Yeah, so I'm not going to make up 900,000 spots in the next in the next 12 weeks. So if I probably can't finish first or second in that league, then I might as well just really crank it up and just see what can happen.
Yeah, I agree, and I fear you doing that, because I have definitely gone full on template. You look at my team; it's like Ozil, Mahrez, Payet, Ali, Lukaku, Aguero, Kane. Anybody with the proper differential week in, week out can just destroy all the competition. So yeah. I wish you good luck.
Yeah, it's sort of feast or famine with that approach, but it's just more fun. I mean, I don't know what the fun would be for me to have a template team the next 12 weeks and just keep picking up little red arrows. I mean, I've had green arrows, I think, 5 of the last 6 weeks, and, you know, all told, I've only gone up about 500,000 spots, you know, which is not insubstantial, but it's still not, you know, it's 60,000 here, 70,000, you know, it's not that sexy, you know. I want boom or bust.
I have the unsexiest goal every season. It's less overall rank, more overall points. My threshold is 2,000. I feel like I need to break 2,000 points every season. And I'm really worried about whether or not I can do that this season. Because what? I'm at 1,373 right now. So it's going to be tight.
So you need about 620 points over the last 12 game weeks. I think that's doable. Yeah. That's less than 60 a game week. Yeah, and that's what's in double game weeks coming up, too. So, you know, I think
that is true. That is true. All right. I won't hold you up anymore, Josh. Let's get to the Hail Cheater Super League.
So Hail Cheater Super League, Brandon, pretty stable top 10, I would say, overall. Owen O'Keefe still in first, 69 points. And as you were mentioning to me offline a moment ago, he captained Pyatt, which was definitely the smart move there.
Yeah, I hesitate to call it Maverick, but it was obviously the most point-getting captaincy choice this week. I mean, people were favoring Aguero and Lukaku, and last week we were mentioning that Payet was our vice-captain choice with the bullet. In the end, neither of us had the courage of our convictions, and we both put the vice armband on another striker.
I know. Yeah, I know. And in fact, I actually thought that I had put it on Payet, and I was surprised when I saw it was on Giroux on Saturday morning. I thought, well, why didn't I do that? Was I a little drunk last night, and I moved it over to him?
Good for you, Owen. That was a great move. Killer move.
Yeah, great move. Against that Norwich defense, and, you know, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but, you know, it's really worth, you know, considering whether you want to just follow the Norwich defense around now and just captain anyone who plays them, because I think that could work out pretty well for you, you know, in general. Kelvin Chan is in second. Hire Ray for United FC. Is that a name change for Kelvin Chan? I feel like that's a new name.
Yeah, we haven't seen that name before. I don't know if that's a reference to star of Goodfellas, Ray Liotta. We're looking to hire Ray Liotta to be the coach for...
Could be, or Ray... who's that La Liga announcer, Ray... Ray Hudson? Maybe could be Ray Hudson.
Or perhaps the great balladeer, Ray La Montaigne.
Or the boxer, Sugar Ray Leonard.
There's
a lot of different options.
This is like a locked room mystery. We have to figure out which Ray he's talking about.
Keep Calm and Climb Up is up to third. That's Mohamed Al Kiasi. Valhalla Wolves is in fifth, or is in fourth, excuse me. That's Kenny Brunvold. Melvin United in fifth, Melvin Mbazi. Ajax Treesdown is in sixth. That's Colin Bothwell.
Getting the green arrow. Keep it up, man.
Gamchester United, Graham McDonald is in seventh. He's been asking us a lot of good questions on the Twitters. Isle of Nubumbu, Gare Meld is on eighth spot. Kaiser versus you just say this one because I can.
Kaiser versus Slotin FC, Laith Kassab.
Thank you. And take a load off Mane. Sean Kamiski is in 10th.
Our good friend Sushant Garg has dropped out of the top 10 for the first time in quite some time. So our thoughts are with you, Sushant.
Our thoughts and prayers are with you.
Yeah. Let us know you're okay, at least. Send us a message.
And both of us dropped a little bit in the Hail Cheater Super League this week, I think because we added a ton of people. So I don't really sure if... what inspired that? But anyone is welcome to join any given week. You can even join in game week 37 if you want.
Why not? Go for it. Bring all your points with you. We welcome all kinds. Yeah, just go to alwayscheating.com. There's an auto-join link, or the code is on our Twitter feed and all those other places.
All right, so let's move on. Okay, so a quick bit of news, Brandon. Bit of news and a little review. Okay. This week we're going to announce a new poll. As some of you longtime listeners may recall, we did a one-third season poll. That was around, I think it was after week 12. Week 12 or week 13, we did a poll.
Yeah, sometime in mid-November. And we like to do these polls, obviously, at the third way marks. And this week it's going to work out for us because, of course, there are no games next weekend. So listen, we need a little extra content for the Always Cheating podcast.
Yeah, let's lay our cards on the table. We need something to talk about next week. So we're going to we'll release the poll later this week. We'll update Facebook, Twitter, and our website when everything is ready to go. And you can vote on lots of different things. If you have any suggestions for poll topics, please feel free to post them on Twitter or Facebook, and we will take your suggestions to heart. But Brandon, before we just to remind people of the results from the 1/3 season poll, because some of this is sort of interesting.
It is interesting in hindsight. I mean, God, this poll seems like ages ago now, but
yeah.
Sometimes in some of these questions, so much has changed, and in other questions, so much has not changed.
Yeah, that's very elegantly phrased, Brandon.
Yeah, I should be running for political office for my ability to say everything by saying nothing at all.
In our last poll, the 1/3 season mark, the FPL MVP was Jamie Vardy with 54.5%. Mahrez was in second with 40%. And Mesut Ozil way down in third with a percentage that's so low I can't even pull it up on the little chart that I did
here. He's got a very small fraction of the pie. He did beat out Alexander Kolarov, who has definitely fallen by the wayside. He finished last in the poll. But then there is Odia Ighalo.
Yeah,
receiving a total of 5 votes.
Yeah, tougher old Ighalo, especially. We'll get to him in a moment. So, best new player 2015-2016 season. Payet dominated this with almost 80% of the vote. Poor Ighalo actually finished 3rd in this poll, and I think if we did this poll again, which maybe we will at the 2/3 season mark, I think Ighalo may rank a little bit higher because, for one thing, Payet was out for about 10 weeks, but Ighalo really went in a great run of form, really right around the time this poll went out.
Yeah,
I think he kind of started it, and then it kind of really hasn't stopped the whole year. I mean, I guess the last few game weeks, he's fallen off a little bit, but, you know, he still had a goal and assist just 2 weeks ago. So
yeah, he's not on red-hot game-to-game form, but if you look at who finished above him, it was just by 1 vote, and it was Kevin De Bruyne. And, of course, now we've all forgotten about dear old KDB with his terrible muscle injury.
Poor KDB. All right, we'll skip. Just as a reminder, the most improbable FPL moment was the complete collapse of Chelsea's fantasy assets, which took 53.4% of the vote. Still basically true. I guess a little less true the last couple weeks as Costa and Willian and even the defenders have kind of stepped up.
Yeah, they've become differentials in a sense if they can keep up their current vein of form.
Yeah, biggest disappointment, literally every player on Chelsea beat out Eden Hazard, 44% to 41%. I think if we did this over again, Eden Hazard would take somewhere close to 100% of the vote. I think, I guess Memphis Depay might be up there too.
Absolutely, yeah. I have more feelings about Memphis Depay than Eden Hazard.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, part of it, Memphis just doesn't seem like a... He's done some things that are very frustrating, including losing his marker in the Man U Chelsea game just 2 weeks ago, and costing you a clean sheet. In fact,
yeah, it cost me a clean sheet in that head-to-head matchup. But it's also like, well, Memphis Depay, what have you ever done? You could look at Hazard and say, well, you were the MVP of Chelsea's campaign, a league-winning campaign last season. So Depay really hasn't done anything for us.
It looks like he's not going to because he's really lost his spot to Jesse Lingard. And I wonder if he'll be gone at the end of the season. I wonder if if they bring in Mourinho or whoever they end up bringing in. I don't think that we'll see Van Gaal next year if they try to make it work with Depay because he's clearly talented and I'm sure he's not a bad guy. You know,
sure. I just hope he knows Mandarin because the Chinese Super League is going to be a great home for him one day.
That's true. Okay, so let's get to a couple updates from this poll. We asked who will be the overall points leader at the 2/3 season mark.
And so basically, who's going to be the overall leader now?
Right. And so here we are, 2/3 season mark, 12 weeks to go, 26 played. The winner of that poll was Sergio Aguero. With 27.7%. It was a pretty tight poll.
This is probably our most even poll result across the entire poll.
It is a very attractive pie. I'm looking at it right now. Yeah. The red piece in this pie was Jamie Vardy, who finished second with about 25% of the vote. And then split behind them was Alexis Sanchez, Romelu Lukaku, and other. And I can't believe this in hindsight that we didn't have Mesut Ozil even as one of the options.
I guess we all felt that there was no way he could. Well, it's like keep up his consistency of serving assists. There's just something unsexy about your whole game being delivering assists. You're inclined to vote for goal scorers in a poll like this.
I suppose that is true. So, and his remarkable consistency. I mean, just we saw it in this last game week. I mean, if he gets an assist, he gets three points most of the time.
Yeah.
Three bonus points. So we're at the two thirds season mark. Just to quickly run through the actual top five. And interestingly enough, the number one and number three we did not even have in the poll. Riyad Mahrez is number one overall with 184 points.
How did we not include him? That's a very strange. That's
I'm
a
not
strange.
Sure. Maybe I didn't take enough time to put this poll together. I remember very clearly doing it on a Sunday afternoon in about 2 hours. So maybe I'll try. I'll spend a little more time this time. In second place was Jamie Vardy, 21 points below Mahrez with 163. Just below him is Mesut Ozil with 156. In fourth place, just like he's fourth place in the poll, is Lukaku, who was at 153 points. And in fifth is Odion Ighalo, who just has been rolling all year. Ighalo.
He's been rolling like a.
I don't know why I said
like a river.
I didn't have anywhere to go. But yeah, Ighalo is in fifth. So we didn't have one, three, or five in our poll. And the person who the most people thought would be the overall points leader, Sergio Aguero, is not even in the top five overall. Now, granted, that is because he missed about 10 weeks for injury. But when you pick Sergio Aguero to be the overall points leader, you have to take into account his very, very spotty injury record.
He's guaranteed to miss at least a week of the season, any given season. If you look at the overall stats, he's like way down, and maybe he's 20th or 25th in overall points.
It's really it's been tough
for basically the one must-own player of the season. It's baffling to see how far down he is.
Yeah, it really is. I think he probably still is must-own, although I wonder if he's maybe less of a must-captain option than we thought of him a couple weeks ago. I just wonder, without De Bruyne, with Yaya Toure playing like he's about 75 years old, it might be time to keep him on your team, but captain some other options. Okay, so player most likely to become a top fantasy asset. The winner of that poll was Eden Hazard. And in second place was Jordan Henderson.
I'll reserve my laughter for the last for when you read all of the names.
And then tied below that were then we had Diego Costa in third, who was actually acquitted himself reasonably well of this lot, and then Memphis Depay and Matt Ritchie finished fourth and fifth in this poll. So we really, I mean, it speaks to how off a lot of the so-called pundits were this year. And I cringed at the idea that we're even pundits, but whatever we are, Brandon, certainly, I thought that Hazard and Depay were, those were two of the first players I put on my fantasy team this year.
Yeah. And I'm my punt on Jordan Henderson 3 or 4 weeks ago, I feel somewhat vindicated looking at this poll at how many others out there listening to the Always Cheating Pod had some faith that Hendo would deliver at some point this season.
Yeah, it just has not happened. So the winner in this poll is Diego Costa with 102 points. Matt Ritchie has 77. Hazard is at 56, which is actually a little higher than I would have expected. Henderson is at 50, although he's been injured for about 10 weeks. And Memphis Depay, who is getting one-pointers like they're going out of style, is in fifth with 47 points.
Yeah, looking at Depay with 47 points, my only assumption is that he's played 47 games.
Maybe they're counting some Capital One Cup matches or something.
U21 appearances.
Yeah, although weirdly in the Champions League he has like 8 goals, so I don't really understand that. He's been cleaning up in the Champions League all year. Okay, so the next, just to run through the last two of these, underrated fantasy asset. The overwhelming leader in this poll was Dusan Tadic with 45% of the vote. In second was Gomez, Rhea Gomez on Watford. Third was Wijnaldum. Arunda Kone was in fourth, and Scott Dan was in fifth. Way down at the bottom.
Runa Kone has done a full 180 and now is being completely brutalized on the Hail Cheaters Twitter feed.
It's true. I stick the knife in it on Kone every chance. I don't know why. He just drives me crazy. He's a really poor finisher. I mean,
yeah.
But the only thing you really require of a striker is that they finish well, right?
Yeah.
Especially a striker who's not very tall. You know, I mean, you know, someone like Olivier Giroud can get away with not scoring goals, not finishing because, you know, he heads the ball down so well. You saw it in that Arsenal match, in the Arsenal-Leicester match. I mean, it's almost like he looks to head the ball down more than he looks to score at this point.
I'll tell you, I am entirely suspicious of anyone who sticks with a funky hairstyle for too long. Listen, these guys, they're professional athletes. They live a weird, wild life. They can have their funky haircuts. But if you had the same funky haircut for like years and years.
I don't even know if you're talking. Are you talking about Kone or Giroud right now?
I'm talking specifically about Kone. Okay. I feel like Giroud has changed it up just enough.
Yeah.
He's but got Kone the with that bleach like blonde hair.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't like when Giroud had the Macklemore. That didn't really work for me. So let's get to the results at the two-third season mark. Wijnaldum is in first with 123. Very inconsistent, but occasionally explosive. Gomez is in second with 111. Testament to Watford's very solid D all year. Scott Dan in third with 106 points. Tadic in fourth. And Kone is way down in fifth with 73 points. A full, what is it? 50 points below Wijnaldum.
Yeah, so Tadic is, I guess we had some faith a third of the way through the season that he was finally going to break through and have a consistent starting role. And Koeman is gone ahead and said, no, Tadic, you're still going to get like either 65 minutes a game or 25 minutes a game. It's your choice.
Yep.
And therefore, he's completely inessential in the game right now.
He really is, and you know, and they really don't need him right now. I mean, given the way their defense is performing, maybe he's too much of a liability on that team.
I mean, Koeman is turning into a Pulis sort of guy with how much he's relying on. Granted, his defense is incredible right now, but
if you were Man U, wouldn't you look at Koeman as a possible replacement? I mean, that would be
the final dagger in LVG's heart, because you know he just despises Koeman. So to be replaced by Koeman would be just unfathomable.
I really admire the way that Koeman has really. It seems like there's nothing you can throw at Koeman that he can't turn into gold. You know, it's any combination of players he seems to find. He seems to find the best combination, you know, once given enough time.
Yeah, and the dip in form that they had, such a remarkable dip midway through the season that he's been able to recover.
Yeah, and they might end up in an Europa League spot now.
Yeah,
it's definitely possible. All right, so the last question was next manager to be sacked. The managers that finished first and second in this poll have been sacked. They didn't happen quite in the right order, though. Jose Mourinho finished first with 39% of the vote. Gary Monk finished second with 24.5% of the vote.
I voted for Gary, so I am vindicated.
You did.
I voted
for Steve McLaren. So I'm still waiting for that to happen. So Monk was the first to be sacked. Mourinho followed a few weeks after that, and McLaren, Howe, and Neil are all still on their teams. I imagine. Well, Neil was Eddie Howe is fine. Eddie Howe's not
he's
going
safe.
Anywhere. He's totally safe. They could probably lose the rest of their matches and he'd still be safe.
And our listeners predicted as much. He got the fewest amount of votes, just 15 votes.
Yeah, I think I just need I think when I put this poll together, I didn't really think he would go. But I mean, there might have been a lot of pressure on them if they'd lost, you know, 10 in a row from weeks, you know, 13 to 20.
It was hard to say with how many injuries that Bournemouth team has had to recover from.
After Callum Wilson went down, it was not looking good. It's not looking good for them right now, to be honest. I think there's still definitely a threat to be relegated. Alex Neil, though, and he's got to clean that defense up. And McLaren, really, I mean, after that disgraceful Chelsea performance, I imagine he's under a lot of trouble, whatever that expression is. He's in a lot of trouble.
He's in hot doo-doo.
He's in hot doo-doo.
Or deep doo-doo?
Yeah.
hot water.
Something like that. All right, so that's where we are. We're going to have a new poll we're going to put up this week, and we'll get the word out. So that's all I want to say about that. Let's move on to our game week review. All right, Brandon, we've got our fixtures to discuss this week. They're all the Sunday fixtures.
It was his true Super Sunday. I mean, he pitted the top four teams against each other and then throw in a Liverpool squad. It was an exciting round of fixtures.
It was. It was fun. Football Factory is a great place to watch soccer. And if you're in New York and you haven't been there, I really highly recommend going, because it's got a little something for everybody too. Like if you could come there with your family and sit upstairs and watch matches, or you can kind of go down in this basement and there are a million TVs.
What we were enjoying more than the Liverpool Aston Villa match was, next to us was a supporters group for Bologna. Uh-huh. Serie A, and they were playing against Udinese. And the Football Factory is so kind, and I don't wish to implicate them here in streaming games online, but there was some sort of grainy picture happening on the TV for this Bologna supporters group that kept getting kicked out like every 5 minutes, and the Bologna fans had to be like, "All right, refresh the feed."
Yeah, they were so good-natured about the crummy BN Sport feed. Yeah. So there's really, something for everybody at that place. All right, so first match, Arsenal-Leicester. Ozil, we've already talked about him a little bit, came through again, 94th minute. Vardy came through as well. So the first half was pretty tetchy, pretty back and forth. Peter Cech was, made a pretty good save on Vardy.
A wonderful game to watch. It was just an amazing spectator game.
I couldn't agree more.
That first half,
they had a great game, great save on Conte too. That might have been in the early in the second half. Uh-huh. So really, from a fantasy perspective, I think it just reaffirmed how we felt about things in general, right? Which is that Ozil remains a must own player. He really is. Despite the fact that I don't own him, he truly is a must own player.
Yeah.
Vardy is looking like the clear favorite to captain next game week.
And we now have further confirmation that he is the assumed penalty taker for that. Yeah,
exactly. Because I'm now pursuing differentials, I'll probably end up going Mahrez as captain in this match.
Okay.
He was taken out at the 55-minute mark, so we know he'll be well rested.
Ludicrous substitution. I mean, we've seen Ranieri sub Mahrez out in earlier games in the season, and we've also seen him just bench Mahrez for certain
games. I do agree with you up to a point. I will say that there's a little after the fact. The problem is if Wasilewski, who is the player who was subbed in for Mahrez, doesn't foul Mesut Ozil with seconds left in the match, and he doesn't swing in that free kick, and then they don't score. It actually seems like a pretty sensible move, right? Because if you're up 1-0, playing Arsenal with 11-on-10 on the road, I think you would absolutely take a 1-1 draw, right?
I mean, we would be
talking about how heroic their defense was if that last ball doesn't find a head.
Yeah, I guess I just like challenge the philosophy of the substitution. And do you want to completely change Leicester's game plan?
Yeah,
based on that, and they gave up the midfield where that was concerned, and they left Okazaki on the pitch, who had touched the ball maybe twice. I mean, he was subbed maybe 5 minutes later.
Yeah. I don't totally disagree with you, but it almost worked anyways. And actually, they had a couple of opportunities to possibly catch Arsenal on the break. It didn't quite work out. I have to admit, I found myself pulling for Leicester a little bit in this match. It was hard not to.
Yeah.
I wanted Arsenal to score, but I think I would have been happy with a draw. It felt so brutal, the Danny Simpson thing.
It did. I guess he was kind of playing. He was playing with fire.
It screws some fantasy managers too, because Danny Simpson's been a pretty popular defender to bring in the last few game weeks. El Magico asked us a question on Twitter. He said, "I'm very annoyed with Simpson's red card. It says Simpson to Fuchs, worth it, or do we don't want to save the free transfer for game week 30 preparation?" I think that Simpson to Fuchs is a transfer worth making.
Absolutely.
I think we know Fuchs will start. I mean, it's not like anything's going to happen on that back line the way they've been playing the last few game weeks. And their fixtures for the next several weeks are very, very solid.
All but say maybe the last three fixtures of the season, their run-in is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, because – and there's really no reason to even to save it for Game Week 30 because there's no chance they won't be playing in Game Week 30. There's some FA Cup matches scheduled for that weekend, so we're going to see some open fixtures there later on. So yeah,
and up to this point,
to have Fuchs home to Newcastle in Game Week 30.
Yeah, and up to this point, Fuchs has scored 16 more points than Danny Simpson has. You know, Danny Simpson didn't force his way into that lineup for a while into the season, but Fuchs's form is great. He only costs 4.8, so he's not going to break your budget.
It's a gross transfer. I mean, no one wants to do that, right? It's just like it doesn't feel good because it's just so annoying to to have to make a like for like defender transfer, especially for a guy who's only out for 1 week. But you know, I mean, especially I don't have Mel Magico's full team here, but you know, especially if he's going to struggle to field a full 11 this game week, then I think you've really got to do it.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you about Vardy's penalty-taking technique, since I think we can also discuss whether Vardy is essential for Game Week 27. But he has this penalty technique that is kind of unlike a lot of other standard penalty takers in the league, where he doesn't, like, shimmy and try and slot it to the opposite way the goalkeeper is going. He basically just rips the ball as hard as he possibly can.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it takes a lot of – I mean, the guy obviously has a lot of confidence. So, I love it. I mean, Harry Kane shoots a lot of penalties like that too. He doesn't always, but he often goes high the way that Vardy does. Yeah. I mean, those to me are like the most undefendable penalties. So if you can pull it off, then I think it's
– Yeah, we were discussing with our friend Steven, who joined us for the games, whether Cech was going to be able to stop that penalty if he actually went the right way. Like, it was at a height at which Cech could have got his hands to it.
Possibly, yeah. But even, you know, that's assuming that he was high enough in the air to – I don't know. I think that would have been hard no matter what to stop.
Okay, so is he a must-own for Game Week 27, Jamie Vardy?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think he's a must-own even if you're pursuing differentials. I think it's really – you'd really be nervous about this match. I mean, I'm not sure – he's not necessarily a must-captain. I think there are some other captaincy options for Game Week 27. But I do think there's a very good chance that he scores double – that he has double figures. If he scores double figures, that'd be amazing. If he scores 11 times this match, that'll really change things. But his ownership is still super high, so – you know, if he does anything at all in this match and you don't have Vardy in your team, you're really going to be struggling, you know.
Yeah, I've actually gone ahead and already made my transfer for Jamie Vardy for Lukaku. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Leicester doesn't have an FA Cup match this coming weekend. So, I mean, he certainly could get injured in training, but the likelihood of him missing Game Week 27 is pretty slim. So I felt pretty confident just going ahead and making that change.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Okay, we have a question from Uppercut Panda who says, with Arsenal looking like the title favorites, what is the best allocation of our three Arsenal spots? So basically, he kind of goes on from there, but just to sum up, do you want two defenders? Do you want two midfielders and a defender? This is assuming you want three Arsenal spots. I actually think that two is probably the way to go. I think Ozil and one defender is probably the best allocation of Arsenal players. I think you could argue for Ozil and two defenders.
There are guys in our private league who clean up on the weeks where Arsenal get a clean sheet, because there are a lot of people in our private league that have Cech plus Bellerin, Cech plus Monreal, Cech plus Koscielny.
Right. Yeah. The next four game weeks are a little tricky for them. They're away to Man U and away to Tottenham two of the next 4 weeks. They have two great home fixtures in between those, or around those, I guess. Home to Swansea in Game Week 28 and home to West Brom in Game Week 30. So I think having two, and then maybe long term, you could look at having two Arsenal defenders. They're not offering a lot of attacking threat so far this season. Kind of surprising. Yeah, I know Koscielny's scored a couple, but I think in general it's a little surprising that Bellerin in particular, who seems to float a lot of really nice balls in there, just hasn't really. I don't know. Maybe he's picked up one assist all season.
I feel like he looks a little tentative going forward, and I think that a lot of people are offering themselves to Bellerin when he gets the ball forward, and so he doesn't feel too much pressure to be putting the balls in himself.
He's certainly the one unquestioned starter on this team, so I think and Koscielny was subbed at halftime, and I don't know. Do we have any updates on what's going on with him yet?
No idea.
Okay.
I think he just heard that Vinyl premiered on HBO this weekend. So,
he had a dead leg.
A dead leg.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if he was shot with a tranquilizer dart, perhaps.
That's basically a Charlie horse, right? So I assume he's going to be ready. Well, we'll
wait
know
too early.
Arsenal has an FA Cup fixture, so we'll know more then.
Yeah, exactly. Way too early to tell with Koscielny. We're talking, 2 weeks from now, so we'll see. He's listed at 75%, so he'll probably be okay.
I think
knowledge at all.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you though that two might be enough. Because basically, the question that is being asked by Uppercut Panda is, do you want Giroud or do you want an Arsenal defender?
Yeah, having known Giroud for the last 2 weeks, I think I can. It hasn't worked out terribly for me. I picked up 5 points both times.
We were saying this while watching the match that Giroud just looks too eager to supply the ball as opposed to put it on target himself.
Yeah, he was one great Peter Schmeichel save away from a goal, an assist, and 3 bonus points in this match. I mean, it was just
Had Leicester got any result from that game, that would go down as the save of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and then one last question, also from El Magico. He says, am I having Sanchez on my team because I believe he's still the player he was last season when in fact he isn't? I think it's really more that he's just still running himself into form. I don't think he's worth owning right now because he's just too expensive.
Yeah.
And he's looked – I mean, the last two matches he's looked really pretty awful. I mean,
he can't get the ball to his feet. His touch is terrible. He doesn't look very confident.
He's not shooting on goal at all. I mean, I don't know if he had a shot on goal in this match. And so we know, I mean, if you look at him, the sort of the first, certainly from weeks, it's been like 5 through 10 of this season. He was looking for goal. He was linking up really well with Walcott and Ozil. It's not really happening for him right now. But, I think I would not be surprised if come game week 32 or something like that, we're all scrambling to get Alexis Sanchez into our teams.
Yeah, I feel for El Magico here because there is that Aguero level fear with Alexis that even if he's out of form, he's always only one game away from becoming unhinged and scoring a hat trick.
Yeah.
So you're just terrified of getting rid of him that week that he does that.
Yeah, but it's just at that price, it's a massive outlay for a player who's just not delivering anything.
Yeah, I agree, and I would be the one dumping him too, so I don't encourage you to keep him.
Yeah.
Just because of that fear.
All right, Man City Spurs. Fascinating results, as I said before, not a match I really enjoyed watching. not only because I captained Aguero this week, I wouldn't quite say it was a sitter because it was a difficult ball, but a goal that he would typically score.
Yeah, like 7 or 8 times out of 10, that ball that's dropping out of the air and he beat the offside trap and he just loved it.
I think the De Bruyne effect, we're really seeing it right now, and I just wonder if the idea of Aguero as the one, like the sort of plug him in as your captain every game week, you don't have to think about it anymore, is something I think we all have to reconsider because he's just not linking up well enough with his midfielders to be a consistent goal threat. I mean, he's always going to every few matches he's going to score a penalty, he's going to score a goal against the run of play, but it doesn't feel like. Outside of that Crystal Palace match a few weeks ago, it doesn't feel like, he's just – a lot of opportunities are being created for him or he's –
I totally agree.
He looks like he's up for it, but it just –
Yeah, he looks 100%, but he's not getting that service. But if you do look at Manchester City's upcoming fixtures, Liverpool, Villa, Norwich, Man United will, of course, be a toss-up. Bournemouth, West Brom, Chelsea, Stoke – I would not be getting rid of Aguero like that. That's a really enticing lineup for the next.
I totally agree. I'm definitely not going to drop him either. But I think there are a lot of game weeks where you could look at other captain options now, especially, as we said at the top of the podcast, with 12 weeks left, it's time to be creative, whether you're trying to make up some ground or there are times though where this game week actually I started to feel pretty good about having him as my captain because he ended up being a bit of a differential. I think that he's only captained by something like 15% of the league overall,
which is strange because of course if you go to the Fantasy Football Scout captaincy poll, he gets like 75% of the vote.
Right, exactly. Week in and week out. Speaking of Tottenham, though, who ended up winning this match, Dave from Burnley says, a key question for me is why are Willian and Christian Eriksen still on 10% ownership?
It's a very good question.
I think I know the answer to this question. They're too inconsistent. You know, it's just not. I mean, Eriksen, especially for longtime FPL players, I mean, Eriksen is just a classic on and off kind of player, you know?
Yeah, but Eriksen is heavily favored here if you're having to choose between Willian and Eriksen, because Eriksen is actually playing on a good team with a terrific midfield and a terrific attacking team. And, I mean, Owen O'Keefe, the league leader in the Hail Cheaters Super League, he got 10 points off Christian Eriksen this week. He ends up with 69 points. That's a key differential for him.
Absolutely. And 3 goals and 3 assists in the last 5 matches for Eriksen. Definitely a player to look at as a possible differential. I just don't think it's going to last, because it never has with him. I mean, even before this run of form, his results were, or, you know, his game week points were 3-2-1, 3-3-5, 2-3. He's always capable of going 7 or 8 matches without doing anything at all.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'll be curious to see how his confidence is after them winning this City game. And he's left on for the full 90, where Dele Alli gets subbed off. I don't know. I would be really happy to have Eriksen in my squad right now. 8.5 million, though, it's just a little too expensive. If he were Willian price level.
Yeah, it'd be Willian's priced at 7 million. Yeah, that would make it a lot more palatable. I think, and Willian, you know, he hasn't actually done that much the last few weeks. And I think any result against Newcastle kind of has to be thrown out the window, because they're so terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to make anything about that Chelsea Newcastle game for that exact reason.
Other than that, Rob Elliott had a, in my opinion, a disgraceful goalkeeping performance. I mean, that guy he's got to come off his line more. I mean, I think that Chelsea could have scored maybe two goals less if he had channeled his inner Manuel Neuer and come out to meet the ball a few times.
When your defense in front of you gives up on every single attacking play, it doesn't really fill you with a whole lot of desire to back them up and try to make the save.
Yeah, it's true. It just makes me wonder whether that team is really going to – maybe Newcastle will go down this year. I kind of didn't think it was possible, but after a match like that, it really forces you to reevaluate things a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree. So how are we feeling about Harry Kane right now, though? Because he's a template forward. He got a goal on a penalty, but I feel like he was largely absent during this Manchester City game.
Yeah, they marked him pretty well, I thought, in this match. I was surprised he didn't end up with any bonus points. I thought he might pick up a couple in this match. Yeah, but their next match is home to Swansea, and you know, that might be a player I have to look at to captain too. I mean, if I'm looking to pursue differential captain options, I think, you know, he's right up there. I mean, that's a great fixture for him. And in the end, he's on penalties, and that's just such a saving grace for a striker.
Yeah, and he is a terrific penalty taker, so I'm never fearful that he's going to miss.
Yeah, and so, you know, in the end, we're looking at a player who's scored, and, you know, he scored in 4 of the last 5 matches, scored 5 goals in the last 5 matches. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's a definite captain option for this game week, if you were reluctant to captain a Leicester player for whatever reason.
I think more than Arsenal, and I feel like it's necessary to get 3 Spurs players at this point. I mean, you could argue who's favored to finish higher in the table, but Tottenham offers so much more week to week than Arsenal does.
Yeah.
Arsenal's always one mistake away from losing confidence and sort of collapsing, or their FPL prospects collapsing. But Spurs, they have the solid defense. They have the attack-minded midfield. I feel like you've got to have 3.
Yeah, I think you're right. Alli, I was actually sweating Dele Alli a little bit this week, because I had him on my bench. I tried to make a differential move this week. I did bring in Jesse Lingard, and I started him over Dele Alli. Did not work out. I was very nervous about how it was going to shake out. But yeah, just, you know, didn't pan out in the end. But Alli only ended up with 2 points, so it was kind of a wash.
Yeah, definitely a wash. All right, I'm going to go out on a limb and say we've covered Manchester City Spurs for now. So, Josh, let me take us to the next fixture, which is worth discussing for entirely different reasons than the last two fixtures we discussed. Liverpool, Aston Villa. The fact that there were any Villa fans left in the stadium after the 60th minute is beyond me. It's a miracle. Like, I would just be so incredibly disgusted by that Villa performance if I were a fan.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was really basically from the start of the match, from the first kick, it was not set up to be Villa's day. And this is a Villa team that, you know, is coming off a pretty inspiring 2-0 home win versus Norwich. You know, it felt like maybe they'd finally turned the corner. The defense was looking a lot more solid.
Yeah,
I was not expecting this result at all. I thought the Liverpool would win this match, but I thought maybe 2-1. You know, 1-0. I did not expect a 6-1 demolish.
Yeah, and as we've discussed week in, week out, I feel like about this Liverpool team is that they seem a little bit exhausted, a little disorganized. I think that they were just flattered and also so delighted when they found out that this was just going to be a training exercise for them. I think around the 10-minute mark, it became rather clear that they could just do whatever they wanted.
Yeah, and from a fantasy perspective, basically everyone got a point. It was like an assist. You get an assist, and you get an assist, and you get a goal.
We all kind of got off a little light, I think, because I had dropped Jordan Henderson for Mahrez. It was, I mean, a little painful to see Mahrez get one and Henderson get an assist. But the fact that the ownership on Firmino is pretty high at this point in the season, the fact that Liverpool scores 6 goals and Firmino only gets 1 assist, we got off scot-free there.
I totally agree. It really could have been worse. And, you know, I mean,
who out there still owns Nathaniel Klein? Who out there is even considered picking up Colo Torre?
Yeah, a lot of people had Moreno for a while. Yeah, it was a strange, just a strange match overall. I don't know how much you can read into this match for long term. Padful on Twitter asks, for the rest of the season, which would you rather invest in? Volatile Liverpool or Chelsea trying to recover their honor?
Well, based on the results of the last few weeks, Chelsea for sure for me, and I've already put my money where my mouth is where that's concerned, because I brought in Aspilicueta for Glenn Johnson this past week, and I do see clean sheets to come for Chelsea. I mean, that Andros Townsend goal really burned me. We haven't really talked about this Chelsea-Newcastle match too in depth, but Chelsea was just monkeying around with the ball so much, trying all these back heels in the midfield, giving away possession.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the answer here would be the Chelsea defense and the Chelsea forward in Diego Costa, and then the Liverpool midfield. I would invest in some. I would invest in anyone in the Chelsea defense that you can afford. I think that you want Firmino for your midfield of these two teams, and then you want Diego Costa as your striker out of these two teams.
Well, here's a question where the Liverpool midfield is concerned, because Sturridge was back. Now, who knows for how long? I mean, he could come back for a game, and then he can break both of his arms getting out of bed or something like that. But if he is back for good, then Firmino owners have to be a little concerned about what Firmino's role is in that starting 11.
Yeah,
then you look to the fact that Philip Coutinho is back and playing in that midfield. He's priced at 8.0.
Right. And this is actually so Graham McDonald actually asked us this on Twitter. He said, disappointed Firmino didn't take more from Villa's capitulation. With Coutinho and Sturridge back, is the party over for him?
Yeah, I guess time will tell, but I would be a little concerned. And if I had not already invested in Firmino, I would be looking at Coutinho first, because we know just historically Coutinho is a vital part of that offense. And if he's healthy and starting in Liverpool matches, he could be more likely regardless of who's starting up front, be it Sturridge, Benteke, Firmino.
Yeah, Coutinho is so frustrating. He's got that Eriksen thing where it's like you flip a coin, you know, and it's like, am I going to have him during the, like, the 3 weeks in a row where he gets double digits, or am I going to have him during the like 8 weeks in a row where nothing happens for him? And he, you know, and I've had Coutinho on and off the last couple of years. It's just, it feels like such a complete crapshoot.
Yeah. I mean, it's all kind of moot for me, though, because there's no reason to be investing in Liverpool because they blank in game week 27. Right. And then after that, they have City, Crystal Palace, Chelsea, Southampton, who Spurs. Nobody can score on.
Yeah.
So I would just let this question sit until at least game week 32,
33. Yeah, I'm looking now at Liverpool. They have a great run in from game week 34 to 38. I bet they end up sneaking into, which they probably didn't even want to do, but it might end up happening anyway. I think they end up sneaking in one of these Europa League spots because they end the season playing Bournemouth, Newcastle, Swansea. Really, they're going to be big deciders in the relegation matches. Bournemouth, Newcastle, Swansea, and then Watford and West Brom in the last five matches.
Wow.
Yeah, very interesting. Final question, Brandon, is from Preethi Chibber. She asks...
Hi, Preethi.
More of a request. Always cheating mini-leaguer, Preethi. Says, please discuss Jurgen Klopp's gleeful and cute face. Thank you. I think if I just mentioned her comment on here, that counts as discussing it, right?
Well, I think his face is gleeful enough.
Yeah.
I have real no comments on how cute his face is. I think his overbite is charming.
I did feel good for Klopp. I know that he has inherited a brutal situation where Liverpool has played a match basically every 3 days since he started. They have this weekend off, so they have a 6-0 win, and they get basically 2 weeks off to recover. Pretty much the best stretch of the season for him, I imagine, is the next like week or so where he can just see where he is, evaluate some of the young players. Everyone's going to be a good mood because of the way they played their last match. Yeah, so I'm really curious to see how they play in the run-in. I mean, we've seen, you know, with some of their matches this year, you know, against Man City and others where they, you know, and Aston Villa, where, you know, they can really turn it on. It's like you get a glimmer of what next season could look like if he, you know, sells a few players, brings in a couple that fit his style. I mean, I'm really excited about Liverpool next year.
For sure, yeah. Just going back to his reaction to all the goals against Aston Villa, you think about his reaction when Liverpool went ahead against Norwich City a couple weeks ago and how he basically bum-rushed his entire team and broke his glasses.
Yeah.
Every time Liverpool scored against Villa, he didn't even get up out of his chair. He just cracked a smile, turned to his assistant coach, and just gave him like a cool like low five.
Yeah.
he just looks so cool and so chill.
Yeah.
So he's a man of many celebrations. All right, Josh. So I think we said all we can say about the game week fixtures. Let's move on to some general Twitter, Facebook questions.
All right, let's do it. Paul Nairn says, who are your differentials for the next 3 weeks? I need to find a template beater. Okay, here's one.
Template beater. Okay.
Here's one for you. A Stoke midfielder or attacker?
Well, that's kind of out of left field, Josh.
Well, maybe just for the next 2 weeks. They play Aston Villa and Newcastle in game weeks 27 and 28.
Okay, and I like those fixtures for them. Based on the results from this weekend, absolutely.
They have started to turn around whatever happened for a couple weeks there, that strange Everton match. And, you know, inspiring win on the road to
Bournemouth. Yeah, and Shaqiri back. Shakir's got an assist, so he got the full 90.
Yep.
He's looking good. And that guy is super affordable, 6.4 million with 1.3% ownership.
I was amazed that Joselu scored a goal. Who remembers Joselu?
Not many people. I mean, he did have a great run game week 19, and then game week 21, he scored goals there as well. So we know he's capable of it. And as far as bonus points are concerned, don't count on it. He's gotten one bonus point across the whole season.
I'm curious. So Arnautovic didn't play because of illness this weekend. I assume he'll be back for this weekend. And, you know, I know he hasn't done much the last couple of game weeks, but if you're looking for a differential, I mean, it's a player that has the potential to have some pretty explosive returns, you know. So I don't know. I mean, we're talking about differentials here, not sure things. So I think that Arnautovic is definitely one to consider.
Yeah, and additionally, they don't have an FA Cup fixture, so they'll be very well rested coming back into game week 27.
How about Troy Deeney?
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah. Okay, so if you flash back a couple weeks ago when we were going into the Arsenal-Bournemouth match, I was trying to work Alexis Sanchez into my team, and thankfully I didn't make it happen. But one of the changes I would have made to my team to get him in was to be to get Troy Deeney in as a third striker.
And God, you would have loved this game week. It would have been amazing.
I would have had to have suffered through last game week where he subbed in and got a point. but still, I totally agree. He's the penalty taker. He's kind of siphoning a lot of points off of Ighalo in the last month or so.
Yeah. It's kind of what we thought we'd see from Deeney this season. Just given that he scored 20-plus goals three seasons in a row in the championship. And didn't quite happen for him at the start of the season. But, yeah, I think between him and Ighalo, for the last 12 matches, it's kind of a toss-up who's going to score more goals.
Yeah,
just with Deeney and Pens, there's always a chance that he could end up, you know, really emerging as the go-to striker on that team.
Okay, here's a wild one for you, Josh. Jermaine Defoe.
Wow,
Sunderland. Sunderland. They're not great. They don't look good. They did end up beating Man United, so they've got some fight in them, mm-hmm. and they've shown that they're capable at least of scoring goals. And Defoe, the goals he's scored this season, he's still like vintage striker. And their run coming up is West Ham, Crystal Palace, Southampton, Everton, Newcastle, West Brom. So Southampton and Everton certainly no gimmies, but soft defense Everton can have time to time.
It's not a bad point. I mean, he scored six goals in this calendar year. He scored a hat trick away to Swansea not so long ago, but a month ago. I like that one. I like that one. That's a good differential. So that's three for you right there.
Okay, so Defoe, Deeney, and a Stoke midfielder.
Yeah, like exactly. Okay, let's go with we'll go with Arnautovic, and I'm going to assume that he's healthy enough to play this weekend. Suraj Garish asks, I can't believe I'm asking this, but are Wijnaldum or Townsend worth a punt owing to Newcastle's great fixtures after their double game week? After their blank game week.
Yeah.
That's an interesting question.
I suppose it is, and Townsend showed his pedigree this week, but God, that guy is such a selfish player. And that Newcastle team I would not bet money on that Newcastle team ever. I haven't bet money on them the last few years.
He did mention Jonjo Shelvey. I feel like Shelvey is a player who might be more worth the punt than Wijnaldum. Just given, I don't know, you know, you watched that whole Newcastle Chelsea match, right? I did, yeah.
And everything goes through Shelvey. He starts every single play.
Yeah. He hasn't actually done that much since he joined the team. I think he only has, he has two assists so far since he's joined Newcastle, which is not so bad, but you know, they've had some pretty tough fixtures too. I mean, they've played away to Everton, away to Chelsea, away to Watford. So the run coming up is they play Stoke, Bournemouth, Leicester, Sunderland, Norwich in the next five, starting in game week 28. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting differential option, especially starting in game week 29, where they have Bournemouth, Sunderland, and Norwich in three of the next four.
Yeah, I'd rather invest in the Newcastle midfield than say somebody like Mitrovic. Up front, because I mean, there are just so many better ways you can spend differential money with a striker. But
yeah,
I go
Deeney over Mitrovic for sure.
Yeah, but a fifth midfielder as Newcastle to rotate in as these really great fixtures come up, I can see how you can make that play.
Yep, I think so too. Because again, you know, sort of the theme of this episode is, you know, if you're looking for differentials, if you've been waiting, you know, if you've been holding with the template and you're ready to kind of hit the afterburners, like really go for it this year, I think starting game week 27, game week 28, that's when you've got to do it, because otherwise you're just not giving yourself enough time to catch up.
Without a doubt, yeah.
So we have questions. We have two more questions. One was from Owen O'Keefe and one was from Chris Morin, but they deal with double game weeks and the captaincy choice for next game week. And I think those should both wait until next week's podcast. So Chris and Owen, we want to acknowledge and thank you for the questions, but we're going to save them for next week.
They sound like perfect optimizer questions, and the optimizer will be back in next week's pod when we get ready for game week 27.
Absolutely. So, Brandon, that's it. We're done.
That's it. Okay. Well, any parting words?
How about Hail Poku?
Yeah, and Hail Cheaters. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/alwayscheating. And our email address is hailcheaters@gmail.com.
Yep. And if you go to alwayscheating.com, you can find us and you can join our mini league there as well. There's actually a league code for that too on our Twitter page.
And do like what Poku does. Subscribe on iTunes and write us a great review.
That's true. Thanks again, Poku, for your wonderful review of the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, 4 stars, of it burned a little bit at first, but then when I realized it was Poku,
it made up for it a little bit.
All right, Josh. Poku forever.
Poku forever.